Okay, the talk is about trends in personal learning. It's a high level talk, and so I'll be looking at overall trends in personal learning. Now, to begin with, I want to talk a bit about what I mean by personal learning, because personal learning really is the focus of this talk. And it's something a bit more specific than learning in general. I've in the past talked about a distinction between groups and networks. Well, I want to expand that a bit. There are different ways of learning. We can think of a range of learning. On the one hand, we have learning that takes place by yourself as an individual. On the other hand, at the far extreme, we have learning that takes place in a group. In the middle is the idea of learning that takes place, on the one hand, by yourself, but in connection with or connected to other people. So you're not in a group, but you're not by yourself either. Another way of looking at the same distinction is to draw a comparison between self-study and collaboration. On the one hand, you can study all by yourself out of a textbook. On the other hand, you can learn collaboratively in conjunction with other people. But in the middle, there is this idea of cooperation, where you set your own agenda and you decide for yourself what you want to learn and what resources you want to use in order to learn. But you cooperate with other people. You exchange information with them. You exchange messages. You talk back and forth and share resources. So this form of learning, cooperation, forms a midway point between self-study and collaboration. And it's this midway point that I'm after when I talk about personal learning. So we look at the overall trends that are taking place in technology as a whole, and we see a trend toward simplicity or easier learning. We see a trend toward invisibility or technology that's in the background. It's not in the foreground. It's technology that is hidden from you, and you just see the result of it. There's a trend toward ubiquity. By that, what I mean is ambient technology. Technology that is in the environment around you, wherever you need it, whenever you need it. And then finally, and most significantly, there's technology that is personalized. It is yours. It responds to your needs. It learns about you. It presents resources and services that are tailored to your particular need and your particular style. So this is the environment in which we are working. How does that relate to education specifically? Oh, I hate that little red ball. Okay, I'm on slide 4, education. Well, when we think about education, really, education is fundamentally a process of communication. I want to contrast that with learning, which is fundamentally a process of growth. Education is a matter of conversation, an interaction back and forth between instructors and students with each other. And the purpose or the intent on the part of the learner is to grow and develop as a result of this interaction. Because the focus of education is on communication, educators over the years have attempted to keep the technology or the tools invisible in the background and to focus on the communication and the teaching. We always hear from educators that it's not about the technology, it's about the pedagogy. And this is the sort of thing that they're trying to express with that sort of sentence. The focus is not simply on the tools, it's not even simply on the content. It includes, as Terry Anderson would say, presence. The idea that you are working with other people, you are cooperating with other people, the idea that you are learning by immersing yourself in a community and taking part in the conversations of that community. Now, in this model of learning, the basic tools almost seem like they're unchanged. And this is a good starting point to look at the tools that we will see now and in the future in learning technology. These basic tools include books or other reading implements. And in the future, we see online books or online reading implements. These tools include things like notepads or writing implements or devices on which we can write or create content, record our ideas, etc. These tools include blackboards and other demonstration tools. And they include a facilitator or a teacher, somebody who orchestrates the entire process, manages the conversation, and stimulates that interaction between the students and within the community. Now, in this model, then, we can run through a range of technologies. We can project a range of technologies, and these technologies will go through various iterations as people begin to use them in order to support learning. The first of these is a device that supports personal access. When I wrote a paper back in 1998 called The Future of Online Learning, I talked about this tool and I called it the Personal Access Device, or PAD. And in the last week or two, I've been very happy because Apple has finally announced the release of a device like the one I described in 1998, and they called it the iPad. So, for me, it was nice because it means I even got the name right when I predicted it. But this isn't something that has just appeared overnight. We got the tablet computer in the past. We had the one laptop per child initiative that was supported by MIT. We've had the BlackBerry and various other mobile devices. And this is a trend that is going to continue. It's interesting, there were many criticisms of Apple's iPad when it came out. But in those criticisms, I think we can see the nature of the device that will be available to us in the future. It'll be a device that is not simply for consuming media, as Apple's iPad seems to be, but also a device that will help us produce media. And this will be important. Access, in my mind, is not simply about consuming, it's also about producing. And so producing content, producing media, will be a major part of the tools. This is the evolution of our notepad, the evolution of our device that allows us to record our thoughts, record our ideas. In the future, and even now, we are seeing more and more systems that allow us to create our own content. And it's interesting because you compare what's available even today with what was available 10 years ago, 20 years ago, in my own childhood, for example, and there is such an increase in the capacity of people to create their own media. Look at the input tools that used to be very difficult to use and very expensive to use. Things like cameras, video recorders, camera phones, screen cams. All of these tools now are widely available to create audio and visual content. I'm using free software called Audacity to record this. I use a camera and a video camera. As a video camera, I use a device called the Flip Cam, which costs me about $100 or so Canadian. So that's less than 100 euros. And it produces perfectly good video content. But it's not just the capturing tools. Our editing tools are getting better and more sophisticated and allowing us to do more. I mentioned Audacity already, which can be used for audio editing. But also, video editing software is very inexpensive. Premiere Elements, for example, again, comes in at less than 100 euros, or it should. It comes in at around $100 here for me. Which, compared to what you used to need, I remember when I worked at Assiniboine Community College, and we got an Avid system, and we were looking at tens of thousands of dollars in order to have one computer that students could use to learn to do video editing. Now there are online sites that allow you to do video editing. Or if you buy a MacBook, you get something like iMovie installed already. Or if you use Windows, there's Windows Movie Maker that is available. Also online, there are many, many thousands of applications that allow you to create content, like Picnic for your photos, Gliffy. Some of them even have a single purpose. Like lolcats are a single-purpose content creation application. If you look at icanhascheeseburger.com, this is content creation, but very specifically focused toward one particular output format. I'm just typing the link into the chat window because it's difficult to understand how to spell Icahn has cheeseburger just from the word. The main point here is that people are more and more able to create more and more sophisticated content. In the future, we're seeing not single types of content, but mashups or APIs where people are able to bring different types of content together in new and unexpected ways. Things like Yahoo Pipes, for example, or Google Labs. In the future, we'll also see new types of content itself. Content created by gestures or movement. Content created by sensor networks. Content created by geolocation. Anything that you can think of that can produce data, people will be able to use to create their own content and their own mashups and their own interesting ways of expressing themselves. Once people are able to express themselves, they are going to want to be able to present their views and their perspectives to other people. Even today, we are seeing increasingly sophisticated do-it-yourself tools for video, for simulation, for multimedia, and more. Even this system that we're using now, this presentation system, DimDim, which is not necessarily perfect, is nonetheless free, and or mostly free. I guess it depends on how many people you have signed up. But more to the point, something like this simply would not have been available 10 years ago. Just didn't exist. You could not turn on your computer and start doing a presentation worldwide. At best, you could use expensive video conferencing systems that use their own dedicated ISDN lines. But more and more, we are able to create increasingly sophisticated presentations. People, just as a hobby, produce internet TV. They produce video podcasts and audio podcasts using a site like Ustream. They are able to create video streams off of their desktop computer that anybody in the world can use. Or they can have conversations with Skype. I have a system that I use here at the National Research Council in Canada. It's called the Cisco MCU. It's a commercial system, so you know, it does cost a fair amount of money for our organization to use it. But what it does is it connects traditional video conferencing systems, traditional audio systems, traditional telephone systems, as well as desktop video conferencing and Skype conferencing, all in the same environment. So we're able to connect all these people from their different technologies together in the same place. These presentation tools allow you to project yourself online. You're not simply creating content, but you're creating a representation of yourself and projecting that to people who are out there in the world. This is what creates the community or the networking aspect of online communications and online learning. I already mentioned earlier the distinction between groups and networks. And with these technologies, these content creation technologies, and these presentation technologies, we are seeing much more the growth of community online. A lot of these technologies you're already familiar with. Things like Facebook, other social networking services, Flickr, and Twitter. From these, we can see a general structure of the way community forms online. And the slide that's showing in the DimDim window illustrates this. Notice that the structure of the online community is not a single entity. It's not a unified unit like a group. There are varying levels of participation. Some people are at the core and very tightly connected to the other people. Other people are at the periphery and only loosely connected to each other. Some people are hardly connected at all. They would be called observers or lurkers. And within that structure, you get substructures. You get clusters of people inside the community forming. A community inside a community. You get hubs as some people become aggregators and sharers of information. And a wide variety of other structures. Now, this is something that George Siemens and I experimented with over the last few years with the Connectivism and Connective Knowledge course. And what we did was, instead of setting up a group, which is the usual way to set up a course, instead of setting up a structure where everybody would do the same thing and everybody would learn the same thing and everybody would proceed at the same pace, we set up a network structure which was less cohesively organized and created a structure like this. And what we discovered is that we are able to support many more people in our learning environment because we weren't attempting to manage them. We weren't attempting to get them all to do the same thing. And this is characteristic of less formal learning communities in general. This is characteristic of learning in networks in general. Now, it's tempting to focus on this to the abstraction of everything else, but it's important, I think, to understand that this is the outcome of the previous technologies that I've been talking about. This is the outcome of personal access online. It is the outcome of the capacity to create and have creativity tools online. And it is the outcome of the possibility of conferencing, presentation, and the means of projecting yourself online. And these trends are what is going to inform the next set of technologies that I want to talk about: immersion and virtual reality. Now, we've heard a lot about immersion and virtuality recently. But what's significant is that immersion and virtual reality, although right now we think of them as something very visually attractive, in the future they will be the places that we create, they will be the places where we communicate, they will be the places where we develop our networks. When I talk about immersion and virtual reality, I'm not just talking about sites like Second Life or OpenSim, which are basically ways of creating worlds for yourself. I include the wide range of simulations, of games, of applications and dashboards. The idea here is that if something is an open-ended environment, if something represents or is even a part of some environment we work with in our regular work world, then it is a type of immersion or a type of virtual reality. And there's a huge wave of these being developed now. I do work with the military from time to time, and I've had the opportunity to use some of their simulations, for example, to fly a simulated helicopter. And these environments are almost real. And in recent weeks, we've seen the release of the movie Avatar here in North America. I'm not sure if it's released in Europe yet. And Avatar is very convincing 3D film technology. And what I noticed about it when I watched it, because it's so convincing, it really draws you in. When I say immersive, I really mean immersive. It's very difficult, if not impossible, to focus on other things or to even think of other things when you are in this 3D, three-dimensional virtual reality. So I think that we're going to see 3D immersive simulations, 3D online virtual worlds that will actually feel like being in the environment that you're working with. And there, in that environment, there will be other people, there will be the creations that people make, there will be people interacting with each other and projecting themselves. But all of this does not have to happen just in the 3D world, just in the immersive reality. We are finding as well more and more that the physical reality of our everyday lives is being augmented or enhanced with computer technology. There's two major ways to do it right now. One way is to have goggles or glasses on which information is projected. The other way is to have a mobile computer that, like a mobile phone, that you're able to expose to the environment and take video of the environment, and then this mobile presents you information about the environment. But the concept is the same in both cases. The concept is to provide you with additional information about the scene that is right in front of you. I've always wished, when I've been flying in airplanes, I fly in airplanes and look out the window and I look at the towns and the cities below, I've always thought they should have big labels on them to tell me what town it is or what city it is, and then I'd know where I am. This is like that. This is like putting labels on the things that you see outside the window or the things that you see as you walk down the street. And our technology for this is going to get better and better. We can imagine a future, not next year, but, you know, 20 years from now maybe, where there are contact lenses and the information just displays on the contact lens. It uses molecular screen technology, so the letters are maybe a few nanometers tall, but since it's a contact lens, they look like they're 10 feet tall to us. And a person could be walking around with contact lenses telling them the name and the background of the people they meet, the type of tree that they're looking at, the reviews of a restaurant that they're walking by, all of these sorts of things. And again, don't just think passive consumer technology. All of these other trends that I've talked about so far come into play as well. People will have their own personalized version of augmented reality. They will begin creating new types of augmented reality. They will present themselves to the world. They will interact through this form of augmented reality. People will create their own world overlaying the real world. You know, there are some cases even now where there are augmented reality games. They're sometimes called alternate reality games, where you take streets and buildings from the real world and you overlay on that a new type of geography, and then you play your game in the real world as though it is this alternate reality. Now, these are the overall trends that characterize the way the technology will be developing. And the question now is, well, how does this lead toward learning? How do we get toward personal learning in all of this? And these are changes that will be coming to the educational system itself. Today, in learning, we're still dependent on the concept of the class. We still have this idea of learning that takes place in groups, and it's still determined by age rather than somebody's inclination or their achievements or their preferences. And sometimes it's disguised. Sometimes we use the word cohort in English to disguise the fact that, no, it's just a group and they're all learning together. And I think people hold to this, maybe for emotional reasons. They hold to the idea of the class because they're afraid that if we let go of that, that people will be scattered to the four winds, atomized, learning all by themselves with no sense of social cohesion. But I think with these new technologies, and especially the way they create new ways for people to communicate with each other and therefore to form contacts with each other, this will become less and less of a concern. Back in 1998, I predicted a shift in the fundamental unit of education from the class, from the group, to what I called at the time the topic. So I said learning would be organized around topics rather than classes. And we're beginning to see that today in the development of competences and competency-based systems and organizations like 10 Competence or HRXML or the Europass Competence System. And more learning is going to shift even from the topic, from the competence, to the task at hand. It will become more project-focused. Learning will be tied to what we are trying to do rather than what we are trying to learn about rather than some sort of class. Excuse me. It will be more project-focused and recognition, evaluation, accreditation will be based more on the competences or the abilities that you demonstrate while you are in the process of attempting to accomplish whatever task that you're working on. Tina mentions the SIP in the chat room, and yes, that's the sort of thing that is going to become more and more prevalent. We're going to see more individual profiles and informational profiles. People will demonstrate or display their achievement in their own personal environment. You know, there's a lot of talk about learning these days, getting back to basics and getting back to a core of achievements. But I think what we will find is that there will not be a common core of content that everybody masters, but rather each person will form their own unique and their own personal cluster of competences and achievements. And these will be discoverable and shareable online. And the act of learning will be the act of developing these competences through participation in genuine or authentic learning communities. And so what we're going to see is an environment where we have learning activities, a wide range of learning activities that support us in the activities that we perform on a day-to-day basis. So as we are doing our work, as we are doing our job, we may at any given time have live online learning, we may have coaching, we may have community activities, We may create or receive multimedia presentations, or we may have performance support systems. Excuse me. And the idea here is that instead of organizing and structuring learning as though it were books and content delivery systems based on institutions and delivered into classes, in the future we will see delivery systems, learning delivery systems, that will function like a game module and plug into these environments where we're interacting with each other, where we're taking part into community activities. You know, and it's a fundamental turnaround of how we depict learning. Today, we go to the learning. Today, we go to a school, to a university, to an online learning environment. But in the future, the learning comes to us. And institutions that provide learning will need to learn how to deliver content and services and interaction and community into the environment in which people work. It's in this frame, from this perspective, that I talked about things like personal learning environments. And really, what a personal learning environment is the way you manage the interaction between your learning resources, which are being delivered to you from learning providers, multiple learning providers around the world, the interaction between these and your existing computer system or your existing work environment. And what you are doing here with a personal learning environment is managing the flow of content and of interaction into your system and managing your creativity, your communication out of the system and into the wider world. Learning management in the future, from the perspective of the learning provider, will be almost like providing a library or almost like providing an application service provider, where on the request or as a consequence of some event, you provide access to learning services, whether it be access to a book or a video or access to a discussion area or chat room, perhaps access to a live online event such as this, or some other immersive or participative simulation or environment. There are different ways these events will be triggered. Sometimes they will be student selected. The student just says, I want a learning experience now. Sometimes they will be event driven. A person may sign up for a subscription and once a day or once a week something will be sent to or something will be initiated for the student. Sometimes they will be event driven in the sense that the personal learning environment is detecting events that are happening. It detects, for example, that a person is attempting to do a new task. Maybe they're trying to create a certain type of document, and help will become available for how to create that type of document. And then finally, they may be instructor driven or mentor or coach driven. They will be suggested to us by people we trust or people we have asked to help us learn things in this new environment. These resources and these services will need to be personal in the sense that they learn about the environment they're being offered in. They learn about the student they're being offered to. And they get this information not just locally, but from anywhere on the internet. And they communicate their own state and their own information to other authorized systems and services, so that really each of these acts as an individual node in a network of cooperating content and content services and interaction environments, all of which react to each other. So that's the overall model of learning that I project. We're seeing it now in the short term. We're seeing many of these trends in the early stages, and really when we think about where learning will go in the long run, it's more about the convergence of these trends, the convergence of creation, the convergence of community, the convergence of immersive environments, and the convergence of educational systems that are able to deliver personalized learning, context-aware learning, in whatever form and to whatever place the learner wants. And so these are overall the trends in personal learning. And that's my presentation, and there should still be some time for some questions or for some comments. Thank you. Yes, I'll send you the slides right after we finish here. I also have an audio recording, and I will be posting as well the slides and my audio recording on my website. So we'll have a backup. Will do. So are there any questions or comments? What kind of environment, I see it there. Right, and what kind of applications are used these learning delivery systems? The answer is, in the long-term future, all applications. And this is what I mean when I talk about ubiquity, or learning as just being an ambient service. Let me give you an analogy. The best analogy is the use of writing. If somebody asked, where would you use writing? The answer today would be everywhere. Anywhere where we need to have some writing, it's there. We have ways of printing writing on sides of buildings. We have ways of putting writing on telephones, etc. And it will be the same for learning. Any place you see writing today, you will see learning tomorrow. Nice winter Canadian picture. Yeah, that's pretty typical. Okay, well, I think that probably wraps us up. We're just about to the end of the hour. Not yet. I would say that you should watch for personal learning environments. If you want to see projects where you can see the management of these systems, watch for initiatives around the idea of the personal learning environment. Other than that, things like the e-framework that has been developed by JISC is something that I'm familiar with, that's sort of attempting to do this. Also, from a management perspective, the LTI, Learning Tools Interoperability Specification from IMS, is again an initial attempt to sort of orchestrate the interoperability of these various tools. Okay. Thank you, and thanks everybody.